This episode of the Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico podcast is brought to you by Spectacle Eyewear. Now, if you've been watching any episodes of this podcast on our YouTube channel, you might have noticed I've been wearing some pretty cool specs lately. Well, you know where I get them? Spectacle Eyewear, 505 Tremont Street, Boston, Massachusetts. Their phone number is 617-542-9600. Head down to Spectacle. Go visit our friend Paul. You'll get yourself some cool specs. Welcome to 2024. Are you ready for the Third World War? Welcome to Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. It is, in fact, 2024, and our friend Keith Bennett returns to the show today to talk about Death Ray Vision, Casket Rats, Wrecking Crew, and all kinds of other fun stuff. We started you off with the song From the Rafters. That's a heavy one. From the 2023 Death Ray Vision album, No Mercy from Electric Eyes on Metal Blade Records. We love Metal Blade Records. Keith is a great guy, someone who has been involved in the Boston music scene since I can remember. So stay tuned for our talk. Check out these words about Joe's albums, and we'll be right back. Being the big vinyl lover that I am, I'm proud to tell you about Joe's Albums in their two locations. The original shop at 317 Main Street in downtown Worcester, Massachusetts, and their second location out in Western Mass at 5 Market Street, Northampton. Both of these shops are loaded with both new and used vinyl. It's hard to walk in either shop and walk out empty-handed due to their amazing collection of records and other cool goodies like t-shirts, mugs, posters, etc. If you can't find what you're looking for in the retail stores, check out their website, joesalbums.com. Thank you, Joe, for being so cool. Yeah, and I'm going to head over to Joe's Albums in Worcester, in Wormtown today, and look around, and maybe I'll find some. Speaking of albums and vinyls, do youngsters call them vinyls? That always cracks me up. It's vinyl, 10 pieces of vinyl. All right, there was an incredible article in Billboard a couple weeks ago about vinyl sales. According to their reporting, vinyl sales surged in the week ending December 21st. That's using Luminate, who are essentially formerly SoundScan. They track all the sales and the stats. That's something you would expect, in fact, you know, thinking, you know, it's Christmas time. I gave two of my relatives albums this year, and I'm sure a lot of you people did. So, of course, you would expect sales to go up. What I didn't expect to read is that this was the third largest week for vinyl albums since 1991. That's the week ending December 21st. That is pretty incredible. There's one explanation for this, and some of you probably know where this is going. Taylor Swift has sold nearly one out of every 15 albums in 2023. That's incredible. Taylor Swift is almost single-handedly saving vinyl sales. Her 1989 vinyl album sold 57,000 copies in that one week. In fact, she had six of the top seven vinyl albums that week. Okay, so you can say whatever you want about Taylor Swift, but she continues to dominate sales. You want more? Check this out. In the week ending December 21st, she sold 194,000 albums, which accounted for 9.5% of all vinyl sales that week. That's like 10%. Truly incredible. One more stat for you. Taylor's Midnights album was the largest selling album of the year, selling 1 million copies. That is really good to hear, by the way, for all my friends at record stores. I know they love selling records like Joe does and everyone else out there does. By the way, Harry Styles' album, Harry's House, had the second largest selling album of the year, selling only half as much as Midnights. It really is the land of Swifties. Hang on and we'll be right back. Attention guitar players, I know you're out there and I have some really good news for you. You ready? Stomp Underfoot are handmade guitar pedals by fuzz-obsessed Matt Pascarella. Matt makes every pedal using quality, new, old stock, obsolete, and rare through-hole components. And now I know if you're a guitar player, you know what I just said, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? Every pedal is also entirely hand-wired, tested, and ready to go. If you want high-quality handmade pedals, check out Stomp Underfoot at stompunderfoot.com. If you know Keith Bennett, chances are you love him. The guy loves music through and through. He's played in bands for the last 30-something years, whether it be the Wrecking Crew, Panzer Bastard, Casket Rats, Death Ray Vision, and as we find out in our talk today, he even played a few gigs with Slapshot. So here I am with one of my faves, Mr. Keith Bennett. Enjoy.
Yeah, let me...
Welcome to those of you watching on YouTube. This is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. If you want to hear this entire show with intros, outros, and music, please go to Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, etc. Please welcome to the show our friend, my friend, Keith Bennett. I was going to say Height Benet, but I did.
Oh, you motherfucker. Cheers. Hi, everybody.
Okay, cheers. just so people know what we're talking about, you told a story the other day at the Middle East about the first Wrecking Crew tape that came out and your name was spelled wrong, first and last.
Yeah.
No okay. comment?
Well, I mean, what are you going to do, man? You talk about a wah, 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 wah moment. It was, you know, what were we, 18? You know, it was my first record. Like the 7-inch was awesome. And, you know, that was spelled right. But the first pressing of the record, like our first album, we're like, oh, you know, you're so excited. You get the box. You know, it's like, it's here. It's here. We're all at, you know, Glenn, our singer's apartment. Oh, look at this. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Boom, boom, boom. And, you know, just reading everything and just taking it all in. And then the very, very at the bottom is like, not just one name misspelled, both names misspelled. So, yeah. So, you know, Caius Benet.
I can sympathize. My first and last name gets spelled wrong all the time. Both the first and the last.
I can see Ricardo getting fucked up. How are you going to misspell Steve?
Well, I spell my name Steev. You know that, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You cheeky little monkey.
Well, you know, speaking of Glenn, because you brought him up, I wanted to talk to you about that, the show. I mean, my impression of that show was, why isn't there an all-ages show every single Saturday at 1 o'clock? Wasn't that a lot of fun on Saturday? I'm talking about, for you listeners, Verbal Assault, My Old Friends Verbal Assault, The Long Wait, and Sonic Bomb at the Middle East upstairs Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock. It reminded me of the CBGB days, man.
Yeah. I should probably, you know, for the benefit of clarity for listeners, I'm head of security at the club we're talking about. They're definitely open to it. Like, I mean, they had them for years and years and years. And I think it just, there was never anything like, we're not doing these anymore. Or like, you know, cause they have hardcore shows all the time. They just don't have matinees. I just think it was just something that kind of got like put to the wayside because, you know, other people like Jimmy Flynn, who just passed away, you know, was doing them down the street at, you know, the Elks Hardcore Stadium. So I don't think it was anything that the club didn't want to do it. It just kind of happened. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk that we're actually trying to push forward to. Actually, we're really pushing to start in the springtime to have Zuzu as, you know, just because that's a front room. It's a really small room where we can, you know, have, you know, bands play their first show, you know what I mean? Or like, you know, just that nice little middle ground where like, you know, a smaller band can grow. It's like, it's no frills. It's, you know, two microphones, a little tiny PA and a little tiny room. And, you know, it's like, you know, back like, you know, A7, you know, O'Brien's, you know, like little places, like that's how shit starts, man. And, you know, not to shit on the club I work at, but it's been a little weird, you know, ever since COVID, where we've just, you know, trying to like, you know, get our footing back, that there has been some disconnect. I mean, we've had cover bands on a Saturday night, and that's not right.
Yeah.
We're the fucking Middle East, not, you know, Faneuil Hall.
Now yeah. You have a long history of working with clubs, aside from playing in clubs. You've worked with clubs for a long time, haven't you? When did you start doing that?
I dropped out of high school the year before, and I started working at the Paradise when I was 17.
So how long ago would that have been? 90s?
No, 80s. I'm 54, man. So I dropped out of high school, so I'm not good at math. So I don't know. it was the last century. It was many, many worlds ago. Yeah.
And so you've worked at pretty much every club in Boston?
No, not every, but I mean, I've been around, because I mean, I more often than not, I was, you know, stagehand. I'd be more on the technical side of things. Mm-hmm. You know, I was the world's worst monitor engineer. I'm a decent guitar tech. I'm a great stagehand. I can pick it up. I can load it. I can unload it. I can tape it down. I can do set changes real fast. I can not be an asshole in the barricade, you know, like take care of kids. But as far as like getting your sound great, don't let me near a mixing board. I ruined many, many shows, man. But as far as like venues, I've pretty much like in one capacity or another, I've worked a lot, a lot. I can't say all of them. Cause I mean, there's some worlds, some scenes that are just, you know, it's its own thing. Like the dance world, like that club scene, never really fucked with, you know, but I'm an old dog, man. I've been around, dude.
Yeah, you know, you've never been an asshole either, by the way.
Yes, I have.
Not when I've been around, I've never seen that side of you. Ever.
I'm glad, man. I'm glad. That's just, I mean, just, you know, you live, you learn, and you grow. But yeah, I wasted decades, you know, trying to be somebody I wasn't. I definitely made a lot of things, situations worse. I definitely thought, you know, at the time I thought I was getting respect when it was more just like, no, that guy's a fucking asshole, you know? So here we are.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not easy being in at shows and clubs around, because there's alcohol, there's all kinds of things that can go wrong. And I remember Boston being a lot crazier than it is now. It seems to have mellowed out now. You can go to a show and not get punched in the face, you know? You can, but
you're going to the wrong shows.
I just wanted to ask you what you thought about the show. Did you have a chance to check any of the show out on Saturday? Because I thought it was a fantastic show.
I did. Like, well, because, you know, I'm, you know, not like it's the CIA or anything like that, but I'm the head of security. So I'm, you know, I'm constantly like moving around, you know, we have five rooms and just setting up and shit like that. I caught a little bit of Sonic Bomb and they were great. It was cool seeing JoJo in a more aggressive band, you know, but it was absolutely like her spirit, her style. And, you know, Chris is a ripper, and he's just a great guy. Long Wait. I was the original singer for the Long Wait.
Yeah, you were. So,
but they, I mean, dude, they fucking rip. They absolutely rip.
Incredible, right?
I caught like three or four songs. Verbal Assault. I did get to see most of their set. Cause by that time, like anything I need to get up and running, I had the wheels in motion, so I could chill, and it was really good. It was weird for me to see them, and not because they were older. I mean, you know, we're all not kids anymore, but like to me, like Verbal Assault, they were never a youth crew band. You know, they were never like Youth of Today, like that kind of thing. Like they're far more, not, I wouldn't say cerebral, but they definitely had more of their own thing going on. There was a little bit more to them than just like straight no frills hardcore. But it was just kind of weird to see them because I was never really like, I liked them, but I was never a huge fan. I never went out of my way to see them. And that's no disrespect to that band. You know, they'd be on, I'd be psyched when they were on a show that I was at. I had Trial. I think everybody had Trial. It's a fucking great record, but I just, you know, I don't really have a lot of vivid memories of them. So to see them, you know, what, 30, 40 years later, there was a bit of disconnect, and it was cool. Like it, in a way, it almost reminded me of the Proletariat, like how when the Proletariat came back, I got that vibe, especially from the singer,
Chris. Yeah.
They had very similar, like not like Bono, but like kind of like messianic, you know, and in a good way. Like it was just interesting. Like they were very, very much, you know, doing, they weren't taking pages from anybody. It was cool to see.
Yeah. But I liked I thought Glenn and Chris both commanded the stage for each of their bands. It was really cool seeing singers up there, like really commanding the stage, you know?
Well, Glenn, and I've said it to him because I've seen most of the other shows that they played. And, you know, it's half joking, it's half serious. And I was like, dude, if you had sang like that in Wrecking Crew, we wouldn't have kicked you out. He's a fucking beast. I mean, he was a beast in Wrecking Crew. Like we kicked him out because we were just egomaniac assholes, and we needed a sacrificial lamb. But he is even better now, man. Like he is. Yeah. It's like I love watching a great band, and it's even better when it's a great band as people I love that I have history with. It's a good feeling. It makes you feel just kind of part of something.
Yeah, those guys, man, in the Long Wait, they're so good. Every one of them is just a great player. Daryl Shepherd, I mean, God, the guy has become a guitar god. You know, I've said this before in the show, but I can't help myself because he's so good. His sound is just so, like, powerful, you know? And the whole band, you know, Jamie, Mark, Steven, they're great, man. What you said about Verbal Assault being more cerebral, that's a good way to talk about. They're from Newport, Rhode Island. So, I mean,
well, dude, I'm from Brookline. You know, I'm not from Brooklyn. I'm from Brookline. You know, I get it. You know?
Yeah. Before we get into Death Ray Vision and Casket Rats, I wanted to talk to you about something that was a real eye-opener for me. Your acoustic set at the Brighton Music Hall.
Well, it wasn't a set. It was one song.
It seemed like a set to me.
An ordeal. It's like, when is this guy going to get done?
No, it
man?
Was more than once. It was more than one song. You played more than one song besides Rocky.
Oh, Recovery. Fuck. That's right. Dude, Wet Brain. Yeah, yeah. I did like three.
Yeah.
All right. I was only supposed to do one.
I didn't know what to expect when they told me that Keith Bennett was going to be doing an acoustic set. I was like, what? And then you tried to get me to go up there with you to do Rocky Raccoon. And that's just not, I would have needed to like have my glasses on and my phone and looking at the lyrics. You know,
dude, did you see the size of my notebook? I'm blind as a fucking bat. Like, did you see that?
Yeah.
It's like 2 feet high. It was like, you know, turn. And yeah.
That was at the Rock Garden Records showcase that you sat in. They did a bunch of Beatles songs that day. And you did Rocky Raccoon. It was fun, man. It was fun. Yeah. I just wanted to bring that up. Talk to me about what you were doing yesterday, because I know Casket Rats is in the studio now.
Yeah, yeah. I was, we're recording a full-length album. We have a 5-song EP that's about a little over a year old that, you know, we put it out ourselves. You can get it, you know, we can get it on, it's on cassette at our shows and it's on Bandcamp, Spotify, all that shit. This is, we're doing a 9-song full length with Alex Garcia Rivera at his studio. It's called Mystic Valley Studios. It's all analog.
That's incredible. Is it a 2-inch machine?
Dude, you're asking the wrong. I'm a caveman. I don't know. I know it's analog. I can't spell analog, but it's analog.
That's great, though. The drums are going to sound amazing because I love drums on tape, man. That is really. So how many songs?
Nine songs. And I mean, it's if people aren't familiar, and most people probably aren't, we're a hard rock band. And so we have some longer ones. We have like a 6-minute song. It's got acoustic guitar on it. It's like, what the fuck, man? You know, it's a leap. Leap from all the other shit.
I saw you guys at Notch Brewery about a year ago.
That was with Long Wade.
Really
yeah.
good, man. You guys are a good band. You're in a couple of really good bands, actually. Is Casket Rats have any kind of a deal at all going on? Or are you just going to independently release it?
No. Well, the plan is that we're recording this thing, mixing it, and then even packaging everything. We want, before we shop it, we want an absolute finished product, so that, you know, whatever we absolutely want a label. And with the type of music that we play, it's hard rock. It's Kiss, Thin Lizzy, UFO, Motorhead, AC/DC, Rose Tattoo, The Cult, like that kind of thing. Like we're knocking on every door. You know what I mean? Like we're starting, you know, I don't even know how, you know, a record company is a fairly obsolete thing nowadays, but we're just, you know, there's with this type of music, I feel like there's no door that's too big. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh,
right.
You know what I mean? So we're going to start at the top and work our way down. But whoever, you know, whoever we decide is, you know, mutually, obviously, that, you know, we're going to work with them. We just want to hand them, all they got to do is slap their logo on it. And, you know, I think that's another good selling point, besides the fact it's a ripping band, that, you know, we're coming with a done deal.
Yeah, that's the way to do it these days. What's the writing process for that band?
It's pretty much half and half between, you know, you just warming up, like when we practice, and just start doing something. So he goes, what's that? Nothing. Keep playing it. Give me this beat. Do that twice. And, you know, we have half of the songs are probably like that. And then there are a few, like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, I've had this kicking around for 7 years, but I was in a black metal band and we couldn't use it. You know, we have a few like that. And it's, I don't know. It's just, it's a nice team. We work really well together.
Do you ever like write when you're alone? Do you write songs?
Yeah.
What do you do it on acoustic or?
I do it on acoustic. I do it on an unplugged bass, an unplugged, like anything. I mean, I actually, for me, because I don't drive, I walk. If I walk or take the T and mostly walk, a lot of my stuff is, I'm just in my head. Like I'll hum a riff. And, you know, people probably think I'm a nut anyway, but I'll be walking around and be like, no. And then I'll kind of air guitar it like, na. And then when I get home, I'm walking up the stairs going, na. And then I'll grab the first instrument I see and, you know, see if it works.
Nice.
Yeah.
Kind of like a rapper would do it almost.
Yes, sir.
Because you always see these guys walking down the street rapping with their headset on, you know, and they're making up rhymes and stuff, you know. It's cool.
It's art, man. That's yeah. Creativity. That's, you know, like, that's wordplay. That's wordplay. As it comes to no shock to anybody, I mean, I'm not incredibly well-versed in hip-hop, but, you know, the wordplay and just the quality of their use of language is absolutely inspiring. You know, like there are bits and pieces I take from rap and hip hop, you know.
Do you have any gigs coming up with Casket Rats, or are you just focusing on recording right now?
We're focusing on recording. We are starting to book a 10-day run in May, like the end of May. We did one in August, end of August, that went really, really well. And now we're doing this, you know, setting up, you know, basically we're starting or finishing here. And we're going down, you know, we're, you know, working our way down as far as Atlanta and, you know, then doubling back.
Cool. Doing the whole East Coast. That's nice. Yeah. What did you do last time in terms of dates? Did you go down the East Coast?
East Coast dates. We did 10 dates. We did St. Vitus. We did New York.
I like St. Vitus. I was down there when Roadrunner Records was recording spots for their documentary, and that's where they had me come down.
It's
and
a
I was
great place.
There. What I, you know, it was during the day, but the place has a great vibe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I honestly, like, I forget. This is gonna happen a lot in this interview. I forget. I really forget. Like, you know, we did Virginia, we did North Carolina, Maryland.
I remember when you did it. I just didn't have the dates. I'm just pulling something else up here because I wanted to use a reference point here.
Oh, I know that the last date was we were doubling back. We did RPM Fest out in like Western Mass, out in Montague, Mass.
Montague, Mass?
Yeah.
Where the hell is that?
Exactly. But dude, it's beautiful. This is either the ninth or 10th year, and it's grown, and it's, you know, there's two stages, you know, vendors, camping. It's turned into something really, really great.
The Berkshire Mountains?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess. I mean, but it was beautiful, man. We played on the Friday and then we stayed over, and I woke up. I'm a morning guy. I woke up at like 7 a.m. the next day, and there's, you know, it was like just, you know, 80, 100, 150 foot pine trees surrounding us, fog, like that light misty fog. You know, it looked like the 13th Warrior or something. It was fucking amazing. It was great. But it's a beautiful place. And it, like, the fest itself is phenomenal. Like, it's a great vibe, really well run. We had a great set.
Fucking all metal?
No. I mean, it's heavy, but you got everything. Like, the big headliners were Black Tusk and King Parrot. And then, you know, you would, there were some grind bands, some hardcore bands, some stoner bands. And there were a couple of rock, like, we were, you know, obviously the rock band, but then there was another amazing band that played the same stage as us the next day. I think it's from Connecticut, Killer Kin, singer is like, he's a cross between Iggy Pop and Steven Tyler. Like, they're kind of like the MC5. Like, it was a phenomenal set. Like, yeah.
That's cool. I like what, you know, a lot of people that aren't familiar with Massachusetts just think of Boston. They have no idea that there's a whole nother world out there. Like Northampton to me is one of the cool towns, you know. And then you further out you go, you know, you were probably near Lee and Pittsfield out in that area if you're in the.
Sure.
I've never heard of that town, but I believe you that it's there. So Death Ray Vision. You signed the Metal Blade Records, a label I worked at many moons ago, and I admire them, especially Brian Slagle. I think he's one of the most solid human beings around, the owner of Metal Blade. Now, you stepped into a situation where the band was already signed. Pete Cortez, I'll never say his name right, Mike D.
Cortese. I always thought it was Cortez.
Yeah, but I know who he is.
It's like Scorsese.
You know, I know him and Mike from Overcast, you know, and then, you know, basically they were signed the Metal Blade and they, are you the second singer or did they have more than?
I'm the third guy. Yeah. But, we weren't signed to Metal Blade when I joined.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They had previously been with, Tooth and Nail and Bullet Tooth. I think Bullet Tooth is the same people from Tooth and Nail. I think one record was on Trustkill and they had a couple of EPs too. And I forget what labels they were on, but no, we weren't signed when I joined.
Okay. So, tell me about how you know these guys. Cause from my understanding is you used to play with them and other when you were in other bands, like you've known these guys for a long time, right? They're like a Worcester. Overcast to me is like a Worcester area band. So
yeah, well, like out that way, like, so starting at the very, very beginning, you know, I loved Overcast. I was a little late in the game to Overcast. Like they got on my radar when, you know, they started blowing up, like blowing up locally, like not nationally, like, but, and I think the first time I saw them was at the Paradise. It was them and it was a weird bill. It was them and Scissor Fight and maybe Sam Black Church, ooh. But they were the opening band and they just, you know, for anybody who isn't familiar with that band or never saw them live, they were an incredible, incredible band. And I was just fucking blown away. And then I'd see Brian, the singer, in my neighborhood, like in Alston. He worked at Blanchard's and then later he worked at Toscanini's in Central Square. Like, and you know, I'd see Pete around, I'd see Mike around, but like, you know, just acquaintances, like a nod, you know, like, hey, what's up, man? You know, that kind of thing. Neither good nor bad. Just like, hey, what's up? Then when Overcast broke up and it was Shadows Fall and Killswitch, they really weren't my thing. Like I'm an Overcast guy. Like I love Overcast. I was really happy that those guys were, you know, as huge as they are, you know, I mean, those guys, platinum records and, you know, huge bands. And that was cool. Like seeing like, you know, like hometown guys, like, you know, taking Boston, taking Massachusetts to the world. That was great. But like the music, like I said, it wasn't something that I dislike. It was just, it was more, not melodic, like mellow stuff, but like they're very influenced by At the Gates, In Flames, like that's melodic Swedish death metal sound, which I'm just like, I'm all right. I don't fuck with it. You know,
Mike but, is still in Killswitch, right?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. That's the bread and butter, man.
Yeah.
That's the bread and butter. Death Ray started, after Shadows Fall and Killswitch were starting their like rise, their trajectory, where they, you know, were getting into that, they were on that next level where they have very regimented schedules. So they had downtime and they wanted to do something that was, you know, more hardcore.
Yeah.
Like stripped out. Like I get, they say all the time that their reference points were, you know, second Cro-Mags record in Leeway.
Oh, you know, like, okay.
Yeah. And you know, that's how Death Ray started. Then, you know, Overcast did a, they've done a few reunions, but Panzer Bastard, my old band, we got asked to play with them at the Middle East on one of their first reunion shows. And that was great. And then right around that time, I did a Halloween, you know, in Boston, there's a tradition of metal bands doing cover sets. and there was a little kind of like quote unquote all-star band that was doing Entombed. They were doing the Wolverine Blues record front to back, and Pete was in the band. They had, and I ended up being the singing for it. That was great. We got along fucking great. And then about 2 years ago, that's when Pete called me, and you know, he's like, I know you're busy with a bunch of things, but you know, would you want something else? And I said, sure. And the funny thing is for about 4 months, I didn't know that it was Death Ray Vision. Because we were still in lockdown, but we were just getting out of lockdown. So things weren't really open. And what was happening was I would get sent, you know, a file, like one song at a time. And it'd be like, you know, they wanted to see my lyric writing, you know, if I can come up with my own vocal lines, things like that. And they would send me something and I would have a week to write, a week to kind of practice. Then I would go, I'd take the commuter rail out to our other guitar player, Chris's house. And he had a home studio where we actually did most of the record, and we'd do one track at a time. Then those guys would listen to it, make notes, and give me another song. Then probably after about 4 or 5 songs, I had the conversation with Pete. He's like, listen, you know, I know you're doing, you got the hard rock band. I know you're a really busy guy. How do you feel about being the singer for Death Ray? And I said, thanks, but no thanks. And he's like, dude, what are you talking about? I'm like, look, dude, here's the deal. Got Casket Rats, I got us, and I got my acoustic thing. I don't think I can do a third band. He's like, are you fucking with me? He's like, no. He's like, did you know that this was Death Ray Vision? No. And honestly, if he had just called me and said, hey man, Death Ray's looking for a new singer, would you be interested? I would have said thanks, but no thanks.
Because so how did they convince you to do it?
Well, they didn't have to convince me. The thing is, I had known of Death Ray Vision, but I had never listened to them because they were a side project of two bands I don't listen to. So I, you know what I mean? It wasn't like, fuck these guys. I wouldn't want to do that band. They suck. It was, I'm pretty sure like they're going to sound like Shadows Fall and Killswitch. And that's not my jam. You know, it's like, I like the Specials. I don't want to be in a ska band, you know?
So
does that make any sense?
Yeah. Did you think you were playing in a band that didn't have a name that was?
I thought I was a brand new fucking project. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. So, did you record before you got the deal?
Yeah. Yeah.
With Chris Rosati. Is that his name? Chris Rosati. Yep. Yeah. So you recorded the whole thing at his place?
Yeah. Yeah. We did. Well, so the demo. We demoed the whole album, and there's two. So there's like 14 songs. So we have demo versions of 14 songs. You know, Chris and I did the vocals at his place.
Right.
And then everybody is far more technically adept than I am. They all have their own home studios. So they would, you know, record on their own. And then when that was finished, they shopped it. And then, you know, Metal Blade obviously dug it. And then we went back and we recorded all the drums at Mad Oak and then everything else at Chris's studio in his house.
Was that with Benny Grotto?
Yeah. Mr. Benny Grotto.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
He's good. He's real good. So, do you know anything about the details of how the band actually got signed to Metal Blade, or was that like Pete or Mike doing the business on that end?
Oh, I know exactly how. You want to know why?
Yeah.
They were captivated by the handsome front man. They're like, we're going to make that kid a star. Now the real version.
Have you met Brian Slagle, by the way? Have you met Brian yet?
No, I would love to, man, because I'm a metalhead. Like that was, you know, I was talking earlier about like, you know, record companies not really being anything in modern times. But dude, 14-year-old me, I'm signing. Like I had them take a picture of me when I was signing the contract. I mean, like, dude, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck like what record companies are like right now. Me, that like Metal Blade, Megaforce, Combat, and Road Racer before there was Roadrunner, Neat Records. Like those, that's what I grew up on, man. That was like I don't give a fuck what it is to anybody else, but to be on Metal Blade for me means a lot, dude. It's a
great label. It's outlasted all of those other labels too. You know, Roadrunner's still around, but Combat's long gone. But I remember Megaforce and Combat. And I remember when all those labels were. That was the '80s. You're talking about, man.
Yeah, dude. That was the shit. And it was the same thing with with hardcore and punk. You would Exclaim, Discord, Touch and Go, and then in England it was Clay. And Important and Red Alert, Partisan Records. Like there was if it was on these labels, you just bought it. And if you didn't like it, it was kind of your fault. Labels were just as important as bands.
That's what I really like about you is you're a real fan of the music and you know your shit. Even though you called me Artie Pufkin, what was his name?
Fucking.
Artie Pufkin. Even though you said I reminded you of Artie Pufkin when I met you at the Paradise. I forgive you. It's okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
So the deal happens, right? How did you find out that you were getting signed to Metal Blade? Did Pete call you and say, hey, guess what? We're gonna be signing with Metal Blade.
I'm pretty sure it was Mike. Mike is the business guy.
Mike Sandel in the business, yeah.
Yeah, it's very impressive to watch his work ethic. And, he would keep everybody in the loop. It's like, I'm going to send it here. I'm going to send it here. I'm going to send it here. And he'd report back, what people were saying, what the feedback was. And, we have this weird gray area that it's not that I'm not privy to it. It's just, I don't care. It's not my world. But I think we have management. I don't really know it because there's a lot of stuff that's piggybacked on, via Killswitch. And so I don't know if we do or if it's like sometimes Killswitch's management will, do us a solid. I really don't know. But I know that, they had a hand in, knocking on some doors. It's like, I'm not going to lie, the Killswitch connection absolutely helps. And
of course.
And it would be stupid not to, take advantage of that. But the thing is, at the end of the day, if we weren't a good band, it's like, that's only going to get you so far. And you see that over time, time and again with history. It's just like, just because somebody's has a member of a good band doesn't mean that you automatically are going to get over or get a free pass just because you have to be good.
Yeah. Just because Metal Blade isn't referred to as a major label doesn't mean that they're not a major label. They are a major label.
They are.
Power,
Absolutely. And especially, for a metal band, yeah. Metal Blade's not bad, man. Not fucking bad, dude.
Big time distribution all over the world. So, you got a record on that label and it comes out all over the world. Speaking of the record, No Mercy from Electric Eyes came out in June. The one thing that really caught my eyes, the songs are all great and everything, but when I saw the From the Rafters video, I talked to you the other day and I'm like, I got to do some research. I totally forgot that I watched that video when it came out and I watched it again. What's the story behind that? Did you guys have anything to do with it? It's got a bunch of police beatings in the footage and it's really an aggressive, it really speaks loudly. Did you guys have a lot of say in the video? Did it or did
100%.
So it was
that's all. Absolutely. That's one thing. We're not going to the two videos that we did, were 100% us. And there were things in the first video. The first video is the idea was better than the finished product. And that was 100% my fault. I think parts of the Behead the King video are corny, but it was worth trying. Also, it was I've never been in it. I Wrecking Crew did a video a long time ago, but that doesn't count. I was a bass player. I wasn't the singer guy. And it's there were shots of me walking around. I had this dolly cam strapped to me. Very uncomfortable. And it's one of those things where you want to, perform, but you don't want to look cheesy. And it ended up I see it. Maybe I see it through a different lens, but I look very uncomfortable. Very I don't know. I don't like watching that. From the Rafters is a completely different beast. And that song, that, I mean, we don't do anything. We're not that kind of band that isn't, everything is 100% us. Every word out of
came up with the concept for the video.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Whose idea was it?
It was everybody's. Yeah, it was everybody's. I mean, the thing is, like, we have a song, you know, it's an anti, you know, police violence song. It's an anti-tyranny song. You know, it's a very angry, you know, call to arms. It's like, what are you going to do? Have us, like, you know, trying to look cool, like standing behind, like, you know, graffiti wall, you know, and, you know, just like playing. No, it's a topic. I mean, you know, we're not Crass or Rage Against the Machine, but you got to, like, you know, we got to shoot our shot. We got to say something. Might as well say it, you know?
Yeah, I really like it, man. It's heavy. It's hard to watch, you know, but you have to watch it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to watch. I mean, the people that's getting done to. I think they're having a considerably worse day than anybody watching it.
So what's the plan? Now, have you guys done any gigs?
Very few. Very few. You know, because we work around the Kill Switch Machine, which is absolutely fine. You know, that's what it is. We're, you know, I talked about gray area. We're 100% an active band, and maybe we're a side project and maybe we're not. How about this? I hate to do it, but it is what it is.
I'm really surprised. You know,
what it is great.
Yeah, you know? I guess Metal Blade must have agreed to allow that. They've had side projects on that label before, so it's not the first time, you know. But sometimes you have the label that demands that you go on tour and stuff, you know.
And they'd definitely be happier if we were. I mean, the thing is like there's you know, over and over again, there's the Kill Switch Machine. Also, you know, we have fathers in this band, like, you know, we have people, and not like quote unquote real jobs, but, you know, guys who, you know, Mike and myself, you know, obviously radically different levels of success, but like we're lifers. And the other guys are in varying degrees of activity in music. And that's not to say that when they're involved in Death Ray, their commitment is 150%. It's not that, you know, they're slacking or anything like that. But, like, you know, everybody has lives, and we all respect each other's choices. So, you know, we can't, you know, unless we were direct support to Kill Switch Engage, we can't go for 30 or 60 days. This band can't do that. You know?
Yeah.
And that's understood. That's not a sticking point with anybody. But, you know, what we try to do, hopefully what we can do is, you know, less is more. Like, you know, what's going to be the most effective thing? I don't want to jinx anything, so I won't say exactly what it is, but in the next week to 10 days, we're going to get an answer on some really cool shit that is not going to be any lengthy touring, but they're going to be very effective, high profile gigs. And if we get them, it'll be huge for us. So we work as hard as we can with what we can do, with what time we can do it in.
I guess this is good for you too, because you got Casket Rats and you got your acoustic thing. And around the time where you almost joined Long Wait, I guess you actually did rehearse with those guys a few times, right?
Yeah.
So was it kind of like, were you in a situation, wow, what should I do? Should I do Death Ray? Should I do the Long Wait? Was there a crossover there, or was that an issue at all?
Oh, well, no, I mean, dude, I was a greedy bastard. You know, some people never get one band, and I'm like, I'm trying to do three. And it just really, there were no hard feelings. It was just, you know, I was missing practices. You know, it's like, I'd be tired, or, like, you know, my wet brain, I forget that I'm like double booked, triple booked. You know, I'll have three different doctors, a tattoo appointment, and two band practices on the same day that I'm supposed to speak at a meeting. It's like, that's how it goes. And it's not great. It's funny, but, like, it's an issue. And that's what happened. And it's like, you know, I had to take that breath and look at it and be like, man, I'm being greedy, and it's not fair. It's not fair to these guys who are like, because they're heroes. They're all fucking heroes of mine. And I'm grateful that my heroes are my friends. You know, we have that history too. And I just, it was just tough to be like, let that gift go, you know, like, it all worked out.
Did you play a role in getting Glenn into the band?
No.
How did that
no,
happen?
But when I heard it was perfect. No, I mean, it wasn't like out of a spiteful thing. I wasn't like, oh, well, fuck you. Good luck. I mean, it was, I'm sure that they had, you know, I don't think that was one thing. It was like, okay, well, you know, we part ways. Like, what are we going to do now, guys? I'm sure it was, you know, not like in a Machiavellian way, but, you know, dude, they're pros. I'm sure that, you know, it was like, look, this isn't working out with Keith. Yeah, well, you know, who should we talk to? Well, let's talk to this guy, that guy. You know, and like, you know, I don't think they were going to make the move to cut me without having, you know, somebody coming right in. That's life, man.
Yeah, I only asked that question because you and Glenn played in a band together for a long time. You know, yeah. You guys have been together for years, you know?
No, he's my brother. We are like beyond brothers. We get along better now than we ever did in Wrecking Crew, man. That's the beauty of life. No, and when I heard that he was the guy, it was nothing but love, man. Absolute fucking joy. And you see it. Anybody who's going to see Long Wait, he is the guy, man. It's fucking perfect.
Yeah,
he's never sounded better. That is where he's supposed to be.
As far as Wrecking Crew goes, I know that you guys were supposed to play with Negative FX on that huge reunion show, but now I understand you're not doing the show.
Yeah, unfortunately not.
Yeah, sad to hear that. Do you think there'll ever be another reunion with the Wrecking Crew, or is that like going to be a one-time deal?
I honestly don't know, because the thing is, like, there's a lot of, you know, these quote unquote reunions, and it's one guy and, you know, new people, or, you know, and we don't want to do that. You know, we all, like, everybody in the band gets along better. Like, in the last 20 years, we've gotten to be better, closer than ever, than even though we were all really close. Like, I mean, we started that band, we were like all hanging out together. We were just like these, you know, degenerate shitheads in Kenmore Square and started a band, you know, but you get older and you live and you hopefully you wise up a little bit. Like, you just see what's really important, and just like what we had, just our friendship alone, besides, like, you know, we were a band, we were one of many, but we're proud of it. And we had great adventures, and we're all still around, and we're all still healthy and happy, and we have great lives. There are wives, there are children. Like, you know, we got some stories, and it's important that we just love each other. And we're not going to do it if one of us can't do it. That's not right.
That's good. I like that.
That would make everything I just said null and void. You know,
all
for one, man.
Yeah. I don't mind when, you know, you have to replace a few guys, like DYS has a new band, except for the two of the originals. But I was going to ask you a couple more things. One was, what do you think about this amazing interest in SSD puts out they have a record from 40 years and now DYS coming out this week, Brotherhood. I mean, what do you think about this? It's pretty amazing, isn't it? 40 years later.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, I it's weird putting beautiful in SSD and DYS in the same sentence, but it is. And it's important, and it's necessary, because those records, those were fucking, you know, shots heard around the world. And now they legit, like, now, like, you don't have to pay $1,500 or, like, you know, get some bootleg thing. It's like, these guys are getting the respect that they absolutely deserve. They earned this. Like, and these records are important, and they're not just a document. They're not just like a snapshot of a time. It's not nostalgia. You put those records on right now, you're going to get the same emotion, the same feeling, the same power right now. Like, a 12-year-old kid needs to hear those records right now. Somebody out there is going to either buy that by mistake, or maybe they're going to have a cool uncle, or, you know, a cool dad who goes, this is my guys. You need to hear where I'm coming from. And it's going to have the same impact it did on all of us. And that needs to happen. And Joe Nelson is a fucking savior for doing this. That, you talk about giving back, like, paying it forward, paying it back, all that shit. That guy, man, when I grow up, I want to be Joe Nelson. He's a good man.
Talking about Joe from Trust Records. Also, Bridge 9's Bridge Nine's doing the DYS thing. So these labels, I think it's fantastic that they're, I mean, we Boston all of a sudden, you know, that not that the hardcore scene didn't get its due, because, you know, Gangrene became really probably the biggest one of all the bands, but, you know, every one of those bands.
No, they didn't. I mean, no. You ever hear a Slapshot? You ever hear a Blood for Blood? Death Before Dishonor?
I'm talking about the original Boston hardcore scene.
I'm talking about
SSD, DYS, Jerry's Kids, Gangrene, The Freeze. Did I say FUs? I'm talking about those bands. I know how big Slapshot is.
All right.
Okay. I'm surprised you weren't ever in Slapshot. Everyone else was.
I was
in that band. You were.
I was.
When were you in? Okay, I figured. Okay, when were you in the?
I was in Slapshot for I think 2 weeks or 3 weeks.
Okay, is it on the Wikipedia page? Because I feel bad.
I don't know. I don't. I don't think Jack would want it on the Wikipedia page. I did that, and then I filled in like. So that was back, like Firewalker era. That was between Jamie and Chris. That was back when, you know, Wrecking Crew, we went through a period. Well, it was a long period of time where like we were one of those bands, like, I think those guys all hate each other. And we kind of did. And it was just one of those things where just, I was thinking, I was hanging out with Steve Ristine and, you know, fuck these guys. He's like, dude, play bass with us. Yeah, that'll fucking stick it to them, you know, because we were like, we were the two big bands, man. We were the rival bands, you know. There was like the Crips and Bloods, but not. Yeah. And I did one show with them. We played at I forgot the name of the club, but it was at the CMJ down in New York.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was maybe not the Limelight, maybe the
The
Marquee. It was the Marquee. We played the Marquee.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh no. And I remember Sepultura, there was an S&M club right across the street, and Sepultura played there the same night. They were playing there while we were playing.
So was that with Mark, Steven, and Choke and you? Is that the lineup?
Yep.
Wow. I don't know how that one slipped by me.
I don't know. Well, I mean, it was the one gig, and then it went great, man. And then, you know, I think like a week after that, you know, it was like, dude, don't join Slapshot, man. It's like, stop being assholes to me. It's like, you stop being a dick. All right. I'm sorry too. You know, and here we are. And then I think maybe going on 10 years ago, Ryan Packer couldn't get into Canada for a show, and I played. It was the lineup was Benny Grotto, Craig Silverman, Jack, and me, and we played up at Le Catacombe up in Montreal. That was a great gig.
So you've played more than one gig with Slapshot.
Two
gigs. That's cool, man. Yeah. Wow, I should have known.
I fucking love him. I don't think Jack loves me, but I love Jack.
I think you're not the only person that would say that, actually.
Well, I'm very much, you know, I mean, people watching this now, it's like I'm pretty insufferable. Yeah, I'm a lot. I know it. At least I know it now, but I'm still not really working on it. But I could definitely be a yapping little puppy, you know. With Jack is very close to the vest, and you know, I'm Daffy Duck. It's chalk and cheese, man. Choke and cheese. It's choke and cheese. So Jack, if you're watching this, I love you, brother. I have nothing but respect, man. Sorry.
I don't know if we can top that. I think that's where we need to end it.
Okay.
Hey, Keith, man, it's always good talking to you. And, you know, I'm sure we'll run into each other around town. And thank you. Thanks for doing this, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, man. Nah, I love you, dude.
For a third time, actually.
Fool.
Take care, man.
All right. Bye, buddy. Have a good day.
Yeah, that's some heavy shit right there. Death Ray Vision, Behead the King from No Mercy with Electric Eyes on Metal Blade Records. Yes, I'm proud to say I worked at Metal Blade Records way back when. Brian Slagle, those guys are awesome. And I was one of the truly one of the great times of my life working at Metal Blade. And it's great that Keith is on Metal Blade. What about Keith Bennett, huh? Is he something or what? You got to love the man's brutal honesty, first of all. I love having return offenders on the show. We're going to do that and do more of that in 2024, our fifth year in existence. So stay tuned for that. You can reach me anytime at twistedrico@gmail.com. We have Instagram, Facebook, Threads, YouTube, where you can actually watch the Zoom interview I did with Mr. Bennett. Also, there's a TikTok page. It's at Twisted Rico. There's a lot of cool clips up there. Check those out. And please, if you want to support this show, check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/TwistedRico, where you can support this show for only $1 a month. One stinking dollar a month. That's $12 a year for all this fine entertainment that we're delivering to you. All right. Till the next time we say goodbye, this is Blowing Smoke with Twisted Rico. I'm your host, Steve Ricardo. Keep the rock and roll alive.